Sylvia and me.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
My name's Renee Brinkerhoff. I am a race car driver and a philanthropist. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Renee, thank you so much for being with me today. And you're in Colorado, so I had to remember that there was a time difference. I'm in Connecticut. You are a race car driver. You're a rally race car driver. And I'm going to say the word correctly, I believe, philanthropist. I did it. See? Now, I want to go back just a little because you haven't always been a race car driver. You have four grown children now. You homeschooled four children. And I'd say about 7 or 8 years ago, in your mid-50s, you decided to do something more in your life other than raising four children and homeschooling them. You needed another challenge. And from what I've read, that was something that was percolating in you since you were about 17 years old and got a VW Beetle. So can you tell us really, how did this really come about? I want to go in first to your race car driving, your rally, and why rally, and then go into, you know, what you've done with that. So let's hear how a woman who in her mid-50s decided she wanted to be in what is usually a man's occupation, a man's, you know, not career, but you decided to become a race car driver. So how did that come about?
Okay. It was a one-liner in my head. It was something that I realized I'd been saying for many, many years, and I don't know how many years, but over maybe 25, 30 years. And I never had heard that in my head until one day. Literally, I was in my laundry room folding clothes, and I heard that voice in my head. And I'd never heard that before, but when I did, I realized, Renee, you've been saying this to yourself for a really long time. And at that moment, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy because I thought, knowing myself, I thought, if you've been saying something to yourself for so long, you're going to now have to go do it. I didn't know about cars. I didn't know about racing. I didn't have like this passion about cars or anything. So it was this wild thing that I'd been saying for whatever reason. And now I knew I had to go do it. So it was basically a have to, not a want to. And that's how it all started. It was just something, I got to go do this thing. I'm going to go do it one time and then I'm done. Check the list, you know, checked it off my list, right? Okay, I'm not going to be in my deathbed regretting that I never tried. I did it and now I'll go do something else. So that's how it all started for me.
Okay, so it started, you had a one-liner, you decided to fulfill something that you had in your head for quite some time. And that fulfillment of that one idea has led you on a mission with a goal to create a record-breaking race car team that raises awareness and funding to combat child trafficking. How did you even get onto that particular, decide that that's where you wanted to put your energy? Was there something that you saw or read that said that this is what the cause that you want to support?
Again, you know, it's one of those weird things in life, right? I don't believe in coincidences, but I was on a bus, a tour bus, and I started talking to this couple next to me, and we were, you know, exchanging information about ourselves. And I asked him what he did for a living, and he proceeded to tell me that he works for the FBI as an undercover agent. And his job is to find people that are producing child pornography, selling child pornography, and using child pornography. And then he arrests them and tries to get them prosecuted. And that was his job. Well, my mouth, of course, dropped open. And first of all, I didn't even know there was that big of a problem in the United States, which I learned that there is. And through all that, and then I followed up with him with some phone calls to learn more and realized that child pornography fuels child trafficking in many, many instances, and how those two are connected. And then I learned through the internet, right? We learned so many things, all about this global problem of child trafficking. And then it wasn't long after that meeting with him that I was sitting on a rental car bus going to a lot to pick up a rental car. I sat down next to a gentleman and he had his phone out, and I just glanced over and he had a pornographic image of a child on his phone. And so I'm thinking, okay, two things have happened to me in this a brief amount of time. What's going on, right? You need to pay attention. Something's going on here. And I just, each one of those so gripped my heart and caused immense distress that I said, oh, I need to do something about it. So that's how it all began, was those things happened. I started learning about it. It seared my heart, and I just developed this passion for helping kids that are being trafficked.
Well, from what I understand, there's an estimate 40.3 million people, of which 25% are children. And that's back in 2016. Who knows how much more that has increased, especially in today's day and age with the pandemic and so on. So you decided that was the cause that you were going to go behind, and you're doing it on a global basis. It's not just here in the United States. And what you have is your Project 365 World Rally Tour. Why, you're going to tell me it was an idea that came in your head, so I'm going to talk to you. And you started the Valkyrie racing team. Mm-hmm. So let's go back and so you spoke to this, you met this FBI guy just by accident on a bus. And from there, you realize that was your mission. This mm-hmm. is what you're behind. Mm-hmm. Exactly. How did you go from there to building this Valkyrie, you know, race team, to then thinking about this global rally?
Well, it all goes back to my one-liner.
Here you go,
right? That thing that changed my life, right? So I was just going to go racing one time. And I went out and I had to get a car and a team and learn all about this, and ended up participating in an event that started in 1950. It's in Mexico. It's called the La Carrera Panamericana. It's a 7-day, 2,000-mile race. It has a 30% attrition. That means 30% of the cars don't finish the race, and primarily because they've either had accidents or they've broken in some way, right? And I didn't know when I got into this race how dangerous it is. But there was this complete facing of all these fears of mine, literally shaking uncontrollably, praying my way at the starts. And then we ended up winning. We won our class in the first year I went out on my team. And it was the first time in the history of the race that a woman had gone out, won her class, and all these things. Right? People will go year after year after year and never even get to the last day of the race. More or less, even podiing, you know, being on a podium. Right?
And this is your first race.
And this was the first time in my car with my team that this happened. And so it was this magnificent, life-changing experience. And I sort of, all these things of who I was as a child, and that I had dreams and hopes of, and personality traits and expressions of adventure, and all these things sort of were reimagined and expressed and found that I didn't have for all those years home educating, right? That was my full-time job, and whew, that was a big one, right? So we went on and raced three more times, and we've podiumed every year we've gone. And we were having this experience of having a voice, because I'm older, I'm in an older car, I'm in a really dangerous race, and we're doing well.
And you're female.
And I'm a woman, right? And I'm an older woman, right? And we said all these things, right? So
they gotta be careful. I mean, we're on our way. Watch out.
Look out. We're still going. So it was okay, we have a voice, and we would go down to Mexico and we would help the children down there. But we realized we have this voice, we can grow it. If we grow our platform, if we grow what we're doing and not just race in Mexico, we can talk about what we are and what we care about globally. And that's how Project 356 World Rally Tour started, was let's take the car, let's grow our platform, let's put the car in really challenging races that either a woman's never been in. So in one event, I was the only woman driver out of 300 drivers, or the car's never been in, and we did several of those. And that gives us media attention that we can say why we're doing what we're doing. So all these things were coming together at the same time, as we want to do more, we want to have a bigger voice. At the same time, I'm having these experiences that are introducing me to this world problem of trafficking and children. And it just organically came together. And then we named ourselves Valkyrie. I just want to share with you, you know, what are Valkyries? In Norse mythology, they're women warriors with compassionate, brave hearts, right? They'd leave Valhalla, they go to the battlefield, and they'd rescue the wounded and the dying that were worthy. They take them back to Valhalla, restore lives. We thought, we want to be modern day Valkyries.
Well,
and
actually,
all this came together.
And you have, you drive a 1956 Porsche, mm-hmm. 356A, I don't know what that means. And it's called Outlaw?
It's an outlaw because it's not factory. It's not strictly how the factory built the car. We made some modifications.
Okay. So Valkyrie, how fantastic. I mean, now knowing exactly where the name came from, it's exceedingly apropos. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better name for what you're doing. So tell us, how did you then start? You realized you had a voice. You have raced in over almost 7 continents. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about your next one. How did you even decide how, you know, where you were going? What were you following? Was it anything in particular?
No, it was a schedule. We wanted to complete racing on every continent as quickly as we could. We wanted to find really challenging races for me as a driver, for the car, for the team. And it had to all sort of come together. And then we wanted events, like I mentioned, you know, that a woman hasn't been in or the car hasn't been in, and that were prominent races, important races that people would recognize that, oh, they did that race. Wow, I can't believe the car was in that event. So we just, you know, you just do your homework. You just start researching and talking to people, right? The good side, the upside of the web, right? And not the bad side that helps traffickers, but... And that's how we did it. And this created this whole thing. It's amazing if you just start thinking outside of the box and then be willing to do things outside of the box, the things that you end up finding yourself doing and accomplishing, it's like, just start going. You just start thinking and go with it, you know. Don't plan too much, just get going.
Because life changes, you know. If you keep planning everything, one, there's no surprises. Yeah, there can be some bad surprises, but there's a lot of good surprises that come along. And every time you go to another country, I believe you take a look and you research and vet out what organization or charity or foundation that you're going to give all the profits to, from what, okay. So can you talk about some of the places that you've gone to and the women and children that you've met?
Sure. I would like to just say that we have Valkyrie Racing, Valkyrie Gives, and Valkyrie Gives has 0% overhead. It's all volunteer time. We don't take salaries. Every dollar we get, we give. And we spend a lot of time figuring out who's doing authentic, good, successful work in this area. And we found nonprofit organizations that are grassroots, frontline organizations. And we spend a majority of our time finding those organizations and then talking to the people that we've met that respect across the world And everybody seems to know each other. If you're doing good work, people know who you are. And finding people that are struggling and need that little push, that little help, that little boost of money to help them get across the goal line. And we've supported organizations, I think, in 13 countries. We in Kenya, we support a house called Heart, and it is operated and by a woman named Sophie. And she was a victim of child trafficking. She was trafficked by her uncle. And there's a whole story behind that. But because of that experience, she wants to help. She found healing through helping other people that have had this problem. And so we support her. We support organizations in Peru. So there's lots of indigenous people there that are preyed upon by traffickers because they're poor, because they're innocent. They don't know what's happening out there on the internet and the pitfalls of people that are trafficking, right? And so there's a lot of children who are trafficked, especially in this one area called Madre de Dios, which is actually one of the most dangerous areas of all Latin America. And it's an illegal mining area where the miners sell the gold that they've just found and go have a binge of maybe 3 to 4 days and spend all their money in these villages. And they want young girls. And if they can get a virgin, they want a virgin. And we have photos of bars, and it says in Spanish, you know, $35. It's in soles, so it's the equivalent is $35 US. Bottle of Johnny Walker Red and a young girl. And this is the special. So these things are happening in different ways all across the world, but these are just like two of the kind of organizations that and things that we're doing. I've also had the honor to participate in being on a team of undercover investigators to go out and get evidence to then give to local agencies that are working with local law enforcement to make arrests of people that are running brothels or go-go bars or whatever, where they're selling kits. And so you have three things, your time, your talent, and your resources. And we're investing all of those in every way we can imagine to help in this area. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, yes, you did. And when you returned from Thailand, was that last January?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You were hand selected as one of three in Washington to be part of an investigative mission. Mm-hmm. Others on the team included former armed forces, and you were the only woman.
Correct. Yeah. So just to give a little more, so I was on a team of three, but there were probably about seven of us all together that were down there together, and we would each have a different job. We each have a different cover name, you know, our story of what we're doing, why we're down there, and we're tasked with to work a certain area. And so I was with two other men. I was with two men. And the three of us went out over a period of about 10 days through different cities in that country looking for people that are selling kids. And then developing that information so that the local people can follow up on that and get more information as well.
Okay. So in your mid-50s, you decided to, I'm going to take a shot at race car driving and I'll do it once and that'll be it. It'll be out of my system. You know, I was 17. I had a Volkswagen Beetle. Okay. To going undercover in very precarious situations to help find people who were involved in human trafficking. Okay, fine. So anyone who says that life is over at the age of 50 or 60 or whatever, and women should just stop trying to do what they're doing, heck no. Mm-hmm. So some of these places that you've been to, you have a classic car, and you've been in areas where it's not just going like on the Merritt or I-95 before. You've been some precarious terrains. Why? I understand how much you want to, you want to help, and this is a passion of yours, and it's very important. But you're not just racing. You're going through areas that are precarious. Have you ever thought to yourself, what am I doing? Or is there really an adrenaline rush when you're doing it and it's something that it's a goal of yours? It's something that you are so passionate about that nothing's going to stop you.
Oh, gosh. Well, to say that I don't have fear would be a lie. Faces are very dangerous, as you're saying. There's the essence, like in Mexico, there's the danger of going through areas that are owned or run by cartels. But really the danger is the racing. And the racing is sheer drop-offs, no guardrails, high speed, animals that you come across in the road or oncoming traffic that's not supposed to be there, rocks you find in the road. I mean, just anything, everything, all the unexpected. So anytime you're pushing the envelope, there's risk, right? So I tend to have a conversation with myself beforehand. And you weigh those risks and you weigh those dangers, and I make a decision in advance, and I go into that having already decided that this is worth the risk. Yes, I could come home in a body bag, I could come home maimed, or I could come home with a great experience, right? But I make that decision in advance, and then once I've decided, I've decided. There's no revisiting that decision. And that just is in a box, it's done. And you can't be behind the wheel, racing at high speeds, trying to make split second decisions about how you're gonna execute what's in front of you and be afraid. That makes you more dangerous. That puts you more at risk. So I love those challenges. I love that type of racing. You're not, unlike racing that most people think of with motorsports, where you're on a track and you're executing with precision the same oval or track design in every turn, you're never going to see that turn again. You're looking at it for the first time and you're having to make a decision. And you have a navigator with you who's calling out information to help you make that decision, but still you have to decide when you're going to brake, when you're getting off the brake, when you're getting back on the gas.
It's up to you.
And you have their life in your hands. You have your life in your hands. And, but there's something so amazing when you're doing that and you're with your navigator and that communication is great and that rapport and the car and everything's coming together. It's an amazing, exhilarating experience. You've left the earth. You're not on the planet. You're in this amazing zone and you just hear the car, you feel the car, you're seeing what is in front of you and you're processing and you're executing. And when you're doing it right, it feels so right. And if you're lucky, you come out ahead at the end of all that and get to stand on a podium, but the whole experience is the cake. The other part's just the cherry on the icing.
Before we get into the ultimate challenge that you're going to be doing shortly, I want to ask, can you tell us, we've talked about your team. Who does your team consist of?
Well, for Valkyrie Racing, Valkyrie Giz, it's my daughter, Christina, and it's the two of us. We do everything when it comes to, running the race company or the philanthropy. And as far as the team, I have mechanics, sometimes one, sometimes two, just depends on if it's a really short event and what the difficulties are going to be as far as the potential for the car breaking. And then I will, my family, huge part, my family, my husband, my other children and their support. I can't do this. I couldn't do what we've done without their support. There's usually a car builder that I'll discuss things with to make decisions about how to develop the car for that event. And my daughter typically is down there with me. Christina will be down there with me, and she's a photographer, and she'll be behind the lens or she'll be directing people to do video or something like that. So I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but oh yeah, the navigator. This racing, you must have a navigator. You have to have a navigator. And a navigator can also be called a co-driver, though they don't share the driving with you. They're in the car with you. And their job is to have these notes, and they just tell you what is ahead, what you're seeing and what you don't see, so that you can visualize and make decisions and you're driving along the way.
Okay. So I did mention you have what's coming up the seventh continent. It's called The Ultimate Challenge, 356 miles on ice in Antarctica.
Exactly.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
So tell me, that is coming up, I believe, before the end of 2020?
Our expectations are to be able to go this winter, but COVID,
yes,
I believe, is going to put a big wrench in that, and we're going to have to wait until the following season. So it's all COVID-driven with travel restrictions and all.
Are you worried at all with, you know, the climate change and so on, that by the time you're able to do this, maybe you won't be able to do this?
Well, that's definitely an unknown, isn't it? I mean, we've got a zero carbon footprint as far as what we've done, and we're planting 20,000 trees through an organization called Tree Sisters, which empowers women in remote areas to reforest, and they get the trees to them, they plant them, they care for those trees, and so we're planting 20,000 trees for our carbon footprint. The car is so old, it basically doesn't use much of anything. It's going to have solar panels. We are using some biofuel. And yeah, that could be a problem, but we're very respectful in everything, in any way, in every way that we do it. And, you know, people have asked, why Antarctica? Well, first of all, we set a challenge for seven continents. And I believe if you set out to do something, you need to do it.
I agree. And
the other thing is, if someone has a computer and Wi-Fi, then child trafficking can be happening, because through child pornography is child trafficking. And plus, as you know, almost all the transacting, or a large amount of the transacting, even in remote areas and poor areas or areas you wouldn't imagine, it's happening on the internet. It's happening on the internet. So yeah, you've got people in Antarctica that I wouldn't be surprised are involved in this. I mean, I'm not impugning anybody, but it happens in my backyard. It happens in your backyard. It happens in every city, every state, every country in this whole world, right? There's no place that's exempt. And so we want to message that it's a global problem. It's a global epidemic, and we need to do something about it. And so that encompasses Antarctica.
And your goal is to raise $1 million, I believe.
Yes. So we've had this amazing group of women that have been supporting us through the years, and they've been super generous. There's only about 30 of them. I think to date we've raised about $200,000. Those donations have come from those women. And we realized there are so many more people out there. And that's just from a small community of people in our backyard that we know, that heard about what we're doing, want to be involved, want us to be their boots on the ground. And we thought, if we could get our message out, we know other people want to join us. They want to partner with us in what we're doing, because what we're doing is very, very unlike most organizations that do this. And the people that we partner with, literally, like in Peru, the man, his life was threatened. They tried to blow up his car because he was disrupting the business of the traffickers. Or there's all these frontline people that are dedicating their lives to this for the passion that they have for it. And so, yeah, we want to message this globally, and we need, you can't do anything without money. It's like, I was talking to someone in Peru recently, and they said they were starving. The Quechua people were starving because of COVID. And I can say, I'm going to pray for you, but it means something. But if I send you money, it means so much more. And I said, I can't just tell her I'm going to pray for her. We have to send her money. Because what can you do? You have to have dollars. So yes, we are on a $1 million mission.
Okay. Well, we're going to get the word out. That's for sure. Before I forget, a couple of things. One, where can people find out more? And of course, if they want to participate in any way that they can, where should they go?
Well, we have a website. We have valkyrieracing.com, and that's V-A-L-K-Y-R-I-E, racing.com. And our whole story is there, what we're doing, how to donate is there. You can always contact us with email if you have questions. Reach out to us. So I would say we're also on Instagram. So it's Valkyrie_racing. Those would be the two. And we're on Facebook. So those are the primary ways to learn more about us.
Okay. And if you had to leave women with some kind of message, what would that message be?
Doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter what you look like. If you've got something in your heart, you've got even just a thought in your mind of something you've been, just go try it, right? That's what I did. And it was really, it's in the whole process of the trying that you receive so much, you learn so much, and you grow so much. And also, like, there's always people that are going to say to you, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. And just, you know, you're going to be polite, and you're going to nod your head, and you're going to smile. No need to engage them, but ignore them. Totally ignore them and go do it. And then the strength of we've gotten from being with other women, and the encouragement that we've received from other women. They'll wait for hours for us to come in at the end of a race day, and we're hugging and crying, and they're thanking us for doing this for women. And there's so much beauty in what we as women can give each other and support each other. And don't feel like you're competing. You're not. You're empowering each other.
Exactly.
We're more together. We're stronger together. It's that whole exponential thing, right? It's not addition. It's multiplication. So, I think those would be my takeaways. You're never too old. You're never any of those things. And I don't care how old you are or how crazy it sounds. It's not crazy. And go out and try. Just go out and try that thing.
Well, Renee, you are definitely an example of what can be done. A vision, a voice that wasn't just a little moment, but it's not only changed your life, but look at all the women and the people that you are touching. So I want to thank you. This has been very, not just informative, amazing as to some of the things that you've done. And I just want to say thank you so much for telling us this story that so many people really, they might have heard a little bit, you know, on the news here and there, but do not realize what a huge issue it is. And so thank you for going out and telling us about this. So again, Renee, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, Sylvia, thank you. Anytime I get to share my story, I'm honored and humbled that I even have a story. And thank you for giving me this opportunity. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.